unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
Al Yomad Israel, Amarim Shema Israel.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Sealed Tunnel, was written by Irv Tunick.
Built this tunnel not out of fear, but out of memories. It was hidden beneath the altar, a darkness, a way of escape. For freedom was new to them, and not yet to be trusted. I had come to Newport for a rest. Overworked, overtired, I was completely run down. During the week, the days were pleasant. I'd spend the day lolling on the beach, and then, about 5 p.m, I'd gather up my energy and get back to my room to relax. After a time, I grew wise in the way of vacationers. I learned how to reverse the tide. On weekdays, the beach was mine. That fine, beige-white beach of Newport. But on the weekend, I'd leave the beach, leave it to the sun-hungry weekenders, and go into town.
Any special place I can drop you, Mr. Baxter?
No. Any place at all. Awful lot of traffic this morning.
Uh-huh. How about here?
Fine.
Want I should pick you up later?
No, never mind, Joe. I'll take the bus.
Okay.
There was excitement in Newport, something I hadn't expected. The Sundays before had been filled with that windless type of silence that settles like a mist on New England towns on summer Sundays. But this Sunday was different. Crowds of people were on the streets. Big limousines nuzzled one another as traffic crawled along. And all were headed in one direction. I moved along with the flood. I noticed the name of the street we were on, Touro Street. Queer name for a New England town. It should have been Oak Street or Lowell Street or Main or Adams. But this was Touro Street, and it was crowded this Sunday morning. A man, he took fast, choppy steps as though we were walking tiptoe, ranged up beside me. His long black coat and round black hat must have made fine contrast to the colorful patterns of the sport coat I was wearing. And when I stopped for a moment, he stopped too.
The synagogue's this way, just down the street.
The synagogue?
Yes. You're going there, aren't you?
To the synagogue?
It's down the street. You can see it from here. Isn't it wonderful? Makes you burn inside. Feel funny, you know?
Yes, but
My bus was late. We had a flat when we were still in Providence. It's very warm.
Yes.
All these people, all these cars. It's a good thing, a fine thing. All these people, Jews, non-Jews, all going to the synagogue.
They are?
What then? Today they are making a national monument of Touro Synagogue. That's wonderful. A national monument, like Grant's too. Everybody's going to be there. Senators, governors. We'll be late, though. We better hurry. You come along with me.
I went with him. I judged his age to be about 50. It might have been 5 years on either side. But his hair was like fine steel wool, and the wrinkles around his eyes gave witness of long hours over tiny print. We came to the synagogue, and I could see at once that it would be impossible to get inside, A crowd overflowed the entrance and packed the lawn in front.
Bad luck. But there's a window. Come, look inside.
I had never seen the inside of a synagogue before, and I hardly knew what to expect. The room was no larger than that of the little church in which I worship, but its beauty and dignity made it seem spacious. The woodwork was painted a clean, brilliant white. Along the walls, graceful Ionic columns held up a gallery now filled with visitors. There were no rows of benches, as you might expect, but along the walls and on both sides of a reading stand set in the center were red-covered seats for the congregation. Set in the east wall was a magnificent Georgian cupboard containing scrolls. I recognized it at once for what it obviously was, a perfect gem of colonial architecture. The stranger tugged at my sleeve and drew me along a little lane.
There's a bench here. We can sit down. My feet hurt.
I sat down beside him, welcoming the shade of an oak tree.
This tree is so old, Reverend Isaac himself might have planted it.
Reverend Isaac?
Reverend Isaac Touro.
Touro? Touro? Well, that's the name of the street we walked up, Touro Street.
He was the first rabbi of the synagogue.
How long ago?
Almost 200 years. He came to Newport in 1759. That was 100 years after the first Jews came.
1659?
Even before 1654, only 35 years after the pilgrims landed at Plymouth. As far back as that, people were searching for new lands to forget old hates.
We talked on, the two of us, this man in his shiny black coat and I in my sports getup. We spoke of Isaac Touro, and I learned to pronounce his Hebrew title.
Hazan.
Hazan?
No. Hazan. Ha. Ha.
Hazan.
No, look. You must first take the sound and roll it up like a little ball, and then flip it out like this. Ha. Ha. Hazan.
Hazan.
Good, fine. But a little more nearer your appendix. Hazan.
Hazan.
Marvelous. Just right.
And so we talked together. Under the shade of the old oak, beside the old synagogue, we talked. And he told me of the tunnel. I had seen the speaker's stand when I looked through the window, a dais of hand-carved oak wrought from native timber and painted a glistening white. There's a tunnel dug under this platform, and a story to be told about the tunnel. He told it to me. He told it in a quiet voice that sometimes gushed with pride, and then, like the sliding pattern of an organ, took on solemn overtones of deep reverence. He spoke names that conjured up unexpected pictures. Mordecai Campanal, Moses Pacheco, Aaron Lopez, Abraham Rodriguez Rivera. Strange mixtures of Canaan and Castile. He spoke of Isaac Touro. It was 1759, 18 years before the Revolution. And Isaac Touro gathered the Jewish people of Newport around him one afternoon.
This is a time of looking ahead. 100 years have passed since our people first came to Newport. We've grown marvelously and prospered. But I recall the wisdom of Rabbi Simeon ben Yochai. He has said, "If you see cities in the land of Israel that are destroyed to their foundations, know that it is because they did not provide for teachers of the Bible and of tradition, as was declared by the prophet Jeremiah, because they abandoned my law." Because of this, and to instruct our children properly in the paths of virtuous religion, we must have a synagogue. It must be built at once. I know this has been on your mind, as it has been on mine. Now it must be done.
Rabbi, we, all of us, have nothing that is dearer in our hearts, but is this the time? Can we do it?
We must do it, Aaron Lopez. If among our own we cannot find enough to finance the building, then we must go elsewhere for help. And we will get it. We will go to every Jewish community in America, even in Europe, to to solicit aid. Why not? Is it not true that a synagogue sanctifies not only the ground it stands upon, but the spirit of all those who have erected its walls? The time is now, this day. Let us not worry over details, but let us proceed with the building.
The appeal of the Jews of Newport was answered handsomely. From New York, especially from the congregation Sheareth Israel, contributions poured in. Peter Harrison, genius of colonial architecture, was engaged to design the building. He did a masterful job. Isaac Touro, together with his intimate friend, the Reverend Ezra Stiles, minister of the Second Congregational Church of Newport, would sit for hours under a tree. Perhaps the very tree that shaded me as my friend told me this story. They would sit and watch the workers. One day in 1762, I don't recall the exact date, but it isn't very important. One day, the two sat together watching the carpenters carving the Ionic pillars for the balcony when a highly perturbed, white, and trembling Peter Harrison entered the scene.
Mr. Touro, what? Will you kindly tell me exactly what is going on?
Good morning, Peter. You know Dr. Stiles?
Yes, of course. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Peter.
What is going on, sir?
Sit down. You look like a thundercloud ready to burst.
Well, I feel worse. Why are those men ripping up the flooring under the speaker stand? Are they crazy? We had to send all the way to Vermont to get that timber.
I ordered them to do so. A tunnel is being dug under the speaker stand.
A tunnel? What for?
For good and sufficient reasons. Is that answer enough, Peter?
No, it isn't half enough.
I'm sorry.
I think, sir, that I'm entitled to an explanation. Why have the designs been altered? No such tunnel appeared in my plans.
Peter, you know why tunnels are usually built?
Storage. Or...
Or what?
Well, that's ridiculous.
Or as an avenue of escape. Is that what you were going to say?
Yes, but...
That is your answer. An avenue of escape.
I don't want to intrude my advice, Isaac, but really now, a tunnel for escape here in Newport is preposterous.
Is it?
This isn't the old world, Isaac, this colony, Rhode Island. It's the very shrine of religious liberty. Roger Williams.
Ah, yes, Roger Williams. He made it very clear. In Rhode Island, he said, all men may walk as their conscience persuades them, everyone in the name of God. Sweet, sweet words.
Well,
time has a way of rusting words and eroding their meaning.
Now, really, Mr. Touro...
You think I'm doing an unwise, an unnecessary thing.
I do.
And I must agree.
My friends, do you have a little time to spare?
For what?
Come to the courthouse with me, right now.
Of course. But why?
You know Aaron Lopez and Isaac Eliezer?
Yes.
Good men?
Excellent. Both are highly prosperous and respected merchants.
Aaron Lopez and Isaac Eliezer have applied for citizenship in this colony. Their petition comes before the Superior Court today. I should like you both to accompany me and hear this decision. Will you?
Why, of course. I should like to congratulate them both.
So should I. I suppose we go and help celebrate this great event.
Case, bailiff.
Petition of Aaron Lopez and Isaac Eliezer for citizenship in this colony. Petitioners arise and approach the bench.
Aaron Lopez?
I am Aaron Lopez, Your Honor.
Isaac Eliezer?
I am Isaac Eliezer, Your Honor.
Yes. The petition of Aaron Lopez and Isaac Eliezer, persons professing the Jewish religion, praying that they may be naturalized on Act of Parliament. Having been duly considered, this court are unanimously of the opinion that the said Act of Parliament was wisely designed for increasing the number of the inhabitants in the plantations. But this colony being already so full of people, the writ of the petitioners cannot come within the intention of said act. This court therefore unanimously dismisses the petition. Citizenship not granted. Court dismissed.
I can't understand it. It seems absolutely incredible. I'm ashamed. Ashamed for all of us.
it's wrong. I admit it's wrong, Mr. Turo. It's a terrible thing to happen. But I can't see the reason for the tunnel even now. This decision doesn't mean that the people are going to start trouble. As a matter of fact, I'm sure almost every citizen is dead against it.
Yes, there I agree with you.
Then why build the tunnel? There's no good reason.
There is every good reason for that tunnel, Peter. Now it must be dug. It has to be dug.
Dr. Stiles...
It must be dug. And every man in this colony must know that it is there. That tunnel must become a symbol to all of us. Terrible emblem of where bigotry and narrowness could lead. As long as it remains, it will shout to everyone. As long as even a few among us are like that judge, no one is safe. I feel as if I should like to burrow in it myself and hide. I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed for all of us.
At this point, my friend went on with his story. The Touro Synagogue was finished and dedicated in 1763. Prosperous years followed. Great men of all faiths came to sit in the red-covered chairs and to hear the ceremonies. But the tunnel was there, still dug deep into the ground and still cut into the hearts of all freedom-loving men. It hurt, but it was there. Tumult and thunder roared suddenly on this scene. It was 1775, and in Boston, at Lexington, from Concord to Savannah, the colonies were suddenly awake. The Jews of Newport gathered in their synagogue.
You must follow your own feelings in this matter and do as you judge best. If you stay, if you remain, when the troops of the king arrive, I know you will not be molested. But safety is sometimes a dangerous luxury. Follow your conscience.
Will you come with us, Rabbi?
No. I shall stay here. The synagogue is where I belong. Where will you go?
To Massachusetts. Some of us, anyway.
I do not see Moses Isaacs.
He's joined the Continental Army. So have Abraham Isaacs and Solomon Rofes and many others.
I will pray for them. Well, we disperse again. Shall we meet again?
We will come back, Rabbi.
You must come back. For this place, this synagogue, is your home. Now let us bow our heads while we repeat the threefold benediction of Aaron, the high priest of Israel. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord cause the light of his countenance to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord lift up his countenance unto you and grant you peace. Amen.
Amen.
The war years were bitter for Newport. Its commerce declined, its buildings fell into disrepair, all except the synagogue. In the dimmest hour, its paint shone white as a snowbank. Its altar never felt the touch of dust. And then it was over. The revolution was over, and the Jews came back to their synagogue. Their beloved rabbi had gone to God, but their place of worship still stood. The tunnel was still there. Now, as never before, the days were thick with uncertainty and foreboding. Restrictive laws were passed, some aimed at neighboring states, some at races and religions. These were symptoms of a disease well known to the Jews. And so they gathered in their synagogue and waited, and the hinges on the trapdoor leading to the tunnel were kept well oiled. Out of this turmoil came hope, however. The Constitution, with its guarantees in the Bill of Rights, became the law of the land. But even here, was this enough? A law is as strong as the men who administer it, and as honest. And the man in 1783 who would administer this law was a quiet and austere man, difficult to approach, unchallenged in his patriotism, yet still an enigma. His name was Washington. In 1781, he had visited at the home of a member of the Hebrew congregation of Newport, and that was good. In 1790, Washington returned to Newport. This time, Moses Sashes called on him, welcomed him in the name of the Hebrew congregation. Washington smiled, shook hands, gracefully accepted the written address that came from the hands and the hearts of these loyal citizens. And that was good, too. When Washington left, he wrote a letter of thanks. Now, outside the Touro synagogue, I listened as my friend read the words of Washington from a folded paper he'd taken from his pocket.
To the Hebrew congregation in Newport, Rhode Island, I shall always retain a grateful remembrance of the cordial welcome I experienced in my visit to Newport from all classes of citizens. The citizens of the United States of America all possess alike liberty of conscience and immunities of citizenship. Happily, the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens in giving it on all occasions their effectual support. May the children of the stock of Abraham who dwell in this land continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of the other inhabitants, while everyone shall sit in safety under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid. May the Father of all mercies scatter light and not darkness in our paths, and make us all in our several vocations useful here, and in his own due time and way, everlastingly happy. Signed, George Washington.
Moses Sashes had read this letter to the Hebrew congregation of Newport. He'd read it standing on a trap door that covered the entrance to a tunnel. This, he knew, was enough. And so that night, late that night, a night not even recorded in the documents of Touro Synagogue, he gathered a few members of the congregation.
I have finished mixing the mortar, Moses.
Do we have enough bricks?
More than enough.
All right. Brick up the entrance.
And so that night, the tunnel was sealed. There was no need for escape. I said goodbye to my friend. He was a stranger no longer. His name was Nathan, and I promised to visit with him someday. Perhaps I will. Back at my hotel that evening, I found quiet again. I sat on the porch, watched the water, watched the way the waves tore the moonlight to shreds. And I thought, they've made the Touro Synagogue a national historical site, a national shrine. That's good, but it isn't enough. They've exhibited Washington's letter to the Newport congregation on the Freedom Train. Now, that's good. But that, too, is not enough. What is enough? The tunnel that is sealed. The fact that it remains sealed. That is the thing. For bricks that are put up are bricks that can be torn down. And if a time will come when the bricks must be torn down, then who among us shall need escape? It may be you, or me, or my son, or yours. For my son and yours, this tunnel must stay sealed. you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we present a talk by Mr. Maurice Levin, prominent civic leader. Mr. Levin.
This year is the 173rd anniversary of American independence. Throughout our land, there will be laughter and merrymaking. Skies will be bright with fireworks. Streets alive with sound. Every human being, each in his own way, will pause to pay tribute to freedom. The Jews of this free and happy land, too, bring a rose to the altar of liberty. A rose nourished by the dreams of its prophets and glorified by the eternal hopes of its people. The rose of the Jew is two rows, tunnel, placed with reverence on freedom's shrine. Graciously will freedom accept this gift, for two rows tunnel is a walled-up, sealed tunnel, a living symbol of the glory and the power of freedom's message. Through the lips of a great American, George Washington, freedom spoke to the Jewish colonists who had brought their old fears with them to the new land. Washington said, "The government of the United States gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance." And as it always does, freedom's voice released man's heart from fear and hate and prejudice and gave him courage to forge ahead. When man emerged from his cave and began to walk erect in the sun, he left his first tunnel of fears behind him. Since then, through genius, toil, sweat, and the ability to work with his fellows, man has conquered earth and sea and air. Every struggle was a step away from a sealed-in existence toward universal brotherhood, freedom, and peace. Civilization itself is the result of man's victories in walling off countless tunnels, separating man from his brother, nation from nation. Man has done much to bridge barriers, but there is still much to be done. False prophets foster fear and suspicion in the human heart. If another man's skin is not like yours, hate him. If another man's ways are different from yours, crush him, they say. Deny your neighbor the right to worship God as he pleases. Deny him the right to live and work and rear his children in dignity and peace. This is the creed of evildoers who would bury man's happiness and man himself in underground tunnels of hate. On this 173rd anniversary of our independence, man has learned that liberty serves all or none. Tunnels no longer can protect man from bigotry, for it is one world and there is no hiding place anywhere. Today, men work together and hope for the last tunnels to crumble, so all men everywhere may enjoy what America first proclaimed, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Thank you, Mr. Levin. Our eternal light drama today, The Sealed Tunnel, was written by Irv Tunick and was presented in celebration of Independence Day. The music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Katims. Cantor Robert Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured as Turo was Edgar Staley, and Arnold Moss was the narrator. The production was under the direction of Frank Papp. Beginning next Sunday, The Eternal Light will present a special summer series entitled The Words We Live By. We invite you to listen. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.